The ring is totally a representation of man's continual and growing dependence on technology to solve our problems, and Tolkien's fear that as we move away from nature, we, like, totally lose our souls and our humanity or whatever.
Evoke Pink Five a little more, yeah.
Okay.
You need to be over
the top. Are you, like, giving me acting notes?
Yes.
Let me have a sip of wine first.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
Hello and welcome to the Anomaly Podcast. I'm Jen.
And in the place of a Dark Lord, you would have a queen! Not dark, but beautiful and terrible as the morn, treacherous as the seas, stronger than the foundations of the earth! All shall love me and despair.
And I am an anomaly.
I am Angela, and concerning hobbits, they are fond of well-prepared food, drinking gallons of ale, and the smoking of pipeweed, just like me. And I am an anomaly. Hello, that was very...
dramatic.
That was a very dramatic opening.
I'm very tight. Okay, the end.
The end. No more podcast.
Consider yourself entertained.
Give him a quarter and call clap. Okay. You know what, Jen?
What?
I was thinking that it is as hot as Mordor around here, I swear to God.
I know.
That's not very good for me to do, but it is. It's part of the accent, what can I say?
The air conditioner is on in the background, and we are not turning it off today. Not at all. It was 107 today.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yes.
I feel like whenever I put my child in my car, it's like child abuse. Seriously.
Walking out your door
is child abuse.
Your child would be child abuse.
Seriously. I haven't been outside except to take the trash out, and I thought I was going to burst into flames.
Well, now you know how Frodo felt when he went to toss the ring in, too.
What a good segue.
Yes. But that was Return of the King, so.
Oh, that's true. But he did think about it. Oh, no, in Fellowship it would be Isildur.
Right.
Ah, there you go.
Bring it around.
So I did.
Circle.
I brought it somewhere. Full spectrum, I don't know.
Oh. So what are we doing today?
Well, if you haven't guessed, we took a poll. Didn't we take a poll?
Yes, we did.
And the vote was almost unanimous for Lord of the Rings. So obviously, as you all know, there are several Lord of the Rings podcasts out there. So, I mean, we could do a whole, I mean, so many books, so many things to talk about. Obviously, we're not going to be able to cover everything.
Not in this episode.
So we decided to start light-ish and talk about the Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, which mm-hmm. is the first book and or movie-ish. Both of us have read the book, but it's been a long time since we've read Fellowship. I've watched the movie about several 150,000 times.
Too.
So we've seen the movie a lot more than we know about the book. So if anybody out there gets mad about something we say, sorry. This is the Anomaly Podcast, and we don't do everything exactly by the book. We are like a jack of all geek things and a master of none.
Right.
That's the way I look at it. So take what you will. Anything else interesting going on in geekdom?
I am listening to the audiobook Wheel of Time, Eye of the World.
Mm.
I love it.
Robert Jordan?
Yes.
Awesome.
And I listened to A New Spring, which is the prequel to the Wheel of Time series. And I had been avoiding that book like the plague because everybody, I'm weird like this. If someone says something is awesome, I avoid it.
Like why you haven't read Snow Crash yet.
Yeah. Well. But... So anyhow, I've been listening to that and enjoying it. And I would read it, but I've been so busy lately with the audio drama that we did.
Yes. Oh, I hope you guys enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was so much fun. So I've been so busy with all the other things I've got going on that I don't get a chance to read very much. So audiobooks.
Hey.
While I work. Yeah.
That's fine with me.
And that's what I'm doing. That's geeky. What about you?
I don't know. Haven't done anything good and geeky. Well, just playing WoW.
And doing the part for...
And doing the part, yes. But, I've been playing WoW. I have my mage up to 66, which is good. She's almost 67. And I want to give a shout out to the Pally who helped me. I can't remember his name, but there was a Pally who helped me yesterday, and thank you very much. It's nice when you meet nice people you don't know, because I usually do not quest with people I don't know, and it's because Jim usually helps me. So if you're a random Pally who quested with a random mage on Shadow Song a couple of nights ago, then that was maybe me. So thank you very much for your help. Appreciate it. That's my nerdy thing.
And there you go.
As I was watching, I did feel bad because I'm like, the orcs and everything are kind of scary, and baby's in the house, and he's getting older, and I worry that he's going to get scared by that stuff. But, you know, Lord of the Rings and that type of stuff, I don't know. I hope it doesn't hurt him too much to see the orcs, because they're scary to me. Anyway, that's it. I guess we can go on. I'm excited. Talk about fellowship.
Let's go.
Okay. Oh, you have a lot of nice notes, like always.
I just made notes like on the dark thing.
Okay. Well, when we first started talking about this, I was thinking we would do like we've done kind of for Buffy and Firefly and X-Files and stuff, where we, you know, kind of talk about what the plot is. I don't know that we necessarily need to do that for Lord of the Rings. Do you?
No.
Okay. I think Russ agrees that we should not have to do this for Lord of the Rings, which is funny because usually when we comment on him, you can't hear him. And then when he does come across, we usually don't say anything, which is kind of funny. But anyway, regardless of that, so I'm kind of the feeling, and like, spoilers, maybe?
Yes.
Maybe some spoilers?
Mm-hmm. There will be spoilers.
Yeah. So, but since we're going to be really sporadic talking about kind of what we like in don't like or whatever about the story as well as the movie, the story, the book. Mm-hmm. And I think we will concentrate more on the movie version because that is what we are the most familiar with.
We may talk about the things that we do know, like in what we remember is different in the movie from the book.
Yes.
And there may be a little bit of analytical stuff.
Yes.
The one email that we were sent.
Boop. You seem down.
Well, all of that shouting made me tired. And when you get possessed by the ring,
oh yeah,
it takes a lot out of you.
I've heard that. I've heard that happens sometimes. Look at Frodo. I did want to start, Jen, with on the lighter side, which is pretty much what Anomaly is. Sometimes we go deeper, but mm-hmm. is just kind of talk about Lord of the Rings as far as your personal relationship. I guess.
With the movie and the book.
With the movie and the book and the story and mm-hmm. kind of how do you feel about it? And we can kind of go back and forth.
I was thinking about this yesterday when I was watching the commentary from the designer's perspective the other night. And just thinking about the fact that I didn't realize it until now, but this movie is like one of my all-time favorite movies ever. And it's a new movie, too. It's not that old.
No, the movie itself, no.
And that's, you know, usually your all-time favorite movies are something that you watched maybe as a kid.
Yeah.
Like mine, it's a
Star Wars.
Star Wars. And we're talking about the original trilogy, as we've stated before.
Everybody knows that.
And The Wizard of Oz and some of my favorite Audrey Hepburn movies. But this is right up there, probably at the top of the list. I don't know. I think it's partly because it's an escape.
Definitely.
You're going somewhere in this book and in this story. And Peter Jackson did such a good job of making you feel like you were in Rivendell or in the Shire.
Well, that's what... Green Dragon. This is something interesting. And in the And I kind of want the conversation to go like this, where, you know, we're just sort of stream of consciousness, because this is something that he talked about. Now, in interest of full disclosure, what I am familiar with is, obviously, I've watched the movie several times. Mm-hmm. I've read the book once several years ago, and I've watched and listened to the appendices for all three movies several times. So if you hear anything familiar, whether by chance or on purpose, I am quoting from there. So that's where I'm coming from. And I remember from the appendices when Peter Jackson was talking about the process, what you just said is that when he went to the designers, he said, this is history. This is archaeology, basically. Mm-hmm. You are finding this lost civilization. They really existed. Everybody knows they didn't really exist, but he treated it like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes through, like you said, in the design process. Oh, and I watched the movie with the director commentary, mm-hmm. and Jen watched with the designer commentary. Mm-hmm. I think that was a good choice. So I'm sorry to interrupt you. Please continue.
That's absolutely fine. So there's that element of escapism where you're entering this rich world that Tolkien created, this wonderfully detailed place, you know, full of languages
and, whole world.
And cultures, and everything is just so vast and rich that there's that element. And then, of course, I mean, I've stated this before, but I really like symbolism.
Of course.
And this story has a depth to it that you don't find in a lot of books today. Books or movies.
Yeah.
Those kind of stories are always more engaging to me, I guess. So it hits on that level. And then, of course, there's an element of romance in it, which I happen to have. You know, I like romance.
Of course. Well, that's what it's a fantasy genre.
Yeah. I count it as one of my favorite movies.
So. Well, I think it's one of those things, the story and now the movie, in a sense, has kind of become a gold standard by which, just like Star Wars is kind of the gold standard by which sweeping sci-fi fantasy is done, and Star Trek is gold standard of, you know, basic sci-fi, you know, this is a gold standard of fantasy. And as far as I'm concerned, those are the three biggies.
Right.
And yes, there is a bunch of good stuff in between there, definitely. Movies, TV shows, all kinds of stuff. But when I think about it, and even before the movies were made, there was still kind of, like Star Wars, and I remember I just listened to the episode where we talked to Erin about Star Wars and how, even though she had never seen it, there's still this kind of heightened consciousness of Star Wars in the world. And I think that even before I read the book or saw the movies, I knew who Frodo was. I knew who Bilbo was. All of us know who Gandalf is. I mean, it's such a part of kind of the cultural milieu. Yeah. I don't even know if that's a word, but you know, it's so part of the culture that, and because it's so basic, it's good against evil. I mean, can't really get any more basic than that. And it's told in such a, we're nerds just like gushing right now, but that's the point. It's told in such a sweeping, wonderful, beautiful manner in the book and in the movies that you can't help but enjoy it. I do have to say that my personal experience in seeing the movie was funny, because it's weird how when I saw the movies, you know, they were a year apart and like different things were going on in my life, you know, going to see the movie, I was dating someone who wasn't Jim. I know, that's crazy. And who was a musician. And so afterwards, it was very important to like talk about the music in the film. And so I remember thinking about that. And also when we saw the movie, when we were walking out, there's this chick who had obviously didn't know anything about Lord of the Rings. And she was like, it's over. That's it. And it was like, it's like, because, you know, really after when Fellowship is over, it's really, the story is just beginning. Yes. And you're sitting there for 3 hours and you're like, if you didn't know that, I mean, it's like, are you kidding me? Yeah. You mean I have to wait like 3 years to finish the story? Okay, whatever.
I remember feeling that way too. I hadn't read the book I read the book after I saw the movie. Mm-hmm.
So, I did too.
Yeah.
I read The Hobbit before I saw the movie so that I knew, because I'd been trying to read The Hobbit for years. And all of you guys know that I am not a reader. It is just impossible for me to read. I try. I do the best I can. But I'm not a big reader. But I did. I did The Hobbit. I did as good as I could because I really wanted to have that basic knowledge before I went into the movie. And then I, of course, was prompted because I wanted to see what was different. Yeah. So I'm sorry.
Continue. No, that's fine. Well, I do like to read, and I read a lot when I have the time. And the one thing that struck me about this novel, or this series of books, is the poetic nature of them. I mean, Tolkien that has been criticized for not being a good writer because
he's a linguist.
He's a linguist, and he wrote this book simply to create a language.
Or several, yeah.
Yeah, several languages. And I read this book, and I see poetry, and it has a flow and a pace to it that's sing-songy.
Yeah.
And I enjoy that. And so I don't...
The book is almost analytical of itself.
Yeah.
In a weird way. I don't know how, I don't know if I said that correctly.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, he's almost commenting on it as he's writing, in a way.
And one thing, a lot of people talk about what the whole struggle was about in the books.
He had gone World War One. Well, he had gone through World War One.
Yes, he was a soldier, wasn't he?
He was a soldier in World War
One. So they thought that his experiences were colored by the war, and that influenced his book, and that's what it was about. But in the foreword...
Yeah.
He says, this is not about the war.
Right.
So.
Well, but this is interesting too, because like I said, when they talk about this in the appendices of the movies, they talk about the fact that Tolkien actually said that he didn't like the idea of allegory.
Yeah.
That he didn't like a one-to-one comparison. Mm-hmm. The ring is atomic energy, or the ring is... you know, this, that, or the other. He liked the idea, what he said was applicability. Mm-hmm. And I'm really quoting, so I know I am if you watched that before. But I like that because then you can look at it. It's kind of like Shakespeare in a way, because Shakespeare can be changed and you can do things to it and update it and say, well, this is what this means. These are basic struggles that no matter what time in history you're looking at, you can still see something. You can feel something. You can see yourself in Frodo or Gandalf or maybe even Saruman. I mean, you can see yourself being, you know, turned to the dark side or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I hate to say this, but I think that maybe Uncle George was also slightly influenced.
Yeah.
Especially since Dooku, Saruman, Dooku, anyway.
Yeah. Well, there's that basic theme too, that the meek.
Yes.
Shall inherit the earth.
Yes.
You know, the elves go away and the hobbits and the men are the ones who rule, or the men are the ones that rule after the elves leave. So, I mean, and they're always considered weak throughout the book. Oh,
men are weak.
And this crap.
And then the hobbits are even weaker than the men.
Right.
Which is great. I love that.
Yes.
And in the foreword to, not the foreword, in the prologue that Galadriel does, talks about how, that hobbits will soon change the fortunes of all, which is so great. And it reminds me too, Frodo gets the ring and he's talking to Gandalf that he would say, okay, here, have the ring. You know, like it's so obvious that he would give it to like the reader or the watcher is like, give it to Gandalf, let him take care of it. You know, you're just a hobbit. You don't want to be part of this. And I love this idea that it has to be somebody. He's the only one who can save the world, basically. Mm-hmm. And how Gandalf and the what you did from Galadriel, how the more powerful you are, the worse the ring is for you. You can't be around the ring. And I really love in the movie how they do that at the beginning when Bilbo leaves the ring and Gandalf is like staring at it and freaking out. And there's all that like heartbeat music. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's awesome. Yeah. And how I don't know. I just think that's wonderful how they portray that, because you see that it is a danger, and it's, I don't know. I really like
it. I think in the poetry from the book is transferred to the movie and those cinematic scenes where it's an angle from the floor up and you see Gandalf's hand come down and kind of hover over the ring.
Yeah.
Like he's tempted to pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. All those shots are very poetic.
Yes. Oh, they are. And almost in the poetry of the book and the what you were talking about and the beat of the book, the rhythm is in the music of the movie.
Yes.
Almost. And that other thing, and this is something I really hadn't planned to do, but I had been thinking about this for a long time and had forgotten that how kind of Lord of the Rings influences other works. You know, I just talked about Uncle George jokingly, but yeah, you can see some of the same themes going on. And also, the hobbits, they're not magical, they're not strong, they're not easily corrupted. And any of you Buffy fans, because I know you like when I talk about Buffy, in the end of season 6, do you still have my season 6?
Yes.
Okay. At the end of season 6, there's all this madness going on. And basically, the idea is that nobody magical can do anything. And Xander has to go save the day at the end of season 6. Everybody knows what I mean when I'm talking about this. And it has that same idea that it's the person who you least expect, which is the hobbits, you know, the heart of the group, the representation of just plain goodness and simplicity, the hobbits, which we talk about in concerning hobbits, you know, the plain simplicity, just dealing with the earth, just being there, just hanging out, just living, you know, L-I-V-I-N, you know, anyway, just doing their thing, and how that goes over even to Buffy. Yeah. So, and that's something that is definitely introduced in the Hobbit tale.
Has any of this been light?
Huh?
So far?
Have we been light?
We've talked about our introduction said that
we're going to be light.
Just like talk about how we liked the movie. Actually, the poetry of the book is transferred to the movie and through the cinematic photography.
We're just talking, though. We didn't have any of this written down or anything.
No.
And, well, I also wanted to say, since if you want to go back light, something I wanted to talk about that I thought of was, and we talked about this in one of our first podcasts, was that Lord of the Rings is one of the reasons we became friends.
Yes.
So I just thought that was something to put in there. And one of the reasons we kind of started the podcast in a way, because I noticed that you had been reading. Were you reading Fellowship or were you reading?
I think I was reading the Two Towers.
Two Towers.
Because I got halfway through the Two Towers and well, it was too much.
I tell you, the Council of Elrond
heavy.
Is where I started to peter out, but I was like, I gotta finish.
I'm so tired
of reading. And see, we can admit that. We can admit that. We can say, you know what? We love you. Good story, Mr. Tolkien. But hey, wow.
Well, I have to admit, I skimmed some of the songs. There are a lot of songs.
There's a lot of songs.
And I can't hear the music. I don't know what the song sounds like. So
yeah, they don't come with sheet. Yeah, they don't come
but
with sheet music.
I did say I like the poetry of the book. So I'm kind of contradicting myself by saying that it's kind of heavy and it's hard to get through. But there are some scenes. Maybe that's why people criticize
it. It's like
Tolkien
Proust. You just have
writer.
To get through it.
Maybe that's why they criticize him for not being a good writer. It's because some of it's like mud. You have to trudge through, you know.
True, but in a way, the whole journey, I mean, the whole journey was like mud. So, I mean, you could think that maybe he was just a complete genius because he made the reading of the book much like the journey itself.
Right.
Dude. I knew I got that master's degree in play analysis for something. Just so I could do a podcast with you.
Right.
I should send copies of my podcast to my professors and they'd be like, okay. Oh man. I've only had half a glass of wine and I feel loopy.
Really?
Yeah. No, I haven't drank the rest of today. Usually I drink lots. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Anyway, I was trying to make it light. So yeah, that's what I remember about you reading Two Towers. So Jim and I always refer to ourselves as hobbits.
Dave and I elves.
And I call you and Dave elves.
We're
elf hunters, by the way. That's what I've decided you are. Jim and I are definitely hobbits because we do. We like simple stuff. We like to hang out in our little hobbit hole and do our thing. So
simple too.
I know, but you guys, y'all are more in for the action. Y'all are more likely to go do sports or something. Y'all are much more athletic than we are. I'm more like Rosie dancing in the middle of the. That's
I love
me.
Rosie, she's so happy.
She is happy. Which character do you like in Fellowship the best?
Wow,
that's hard, huh?
Fellowship.
Fellowship. We're just talking about Fellowship today.
About Fellowship.
It's hard.
Yes, it's very hard. I have to pick one.
Okay, let me give this a caveat. Okay. Hold on just a second. Caveat. First, we'll talk about just like seriously.
Okay.
Who do you like the characteristics of? Like somebody that you really like, man, woman, whatever. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we're going to have the girly story about which one we like the best. Like that. Okay? So first it's the serious one, and then we'll do the funny one.
Okay.
Go.
Oh, good grief. It's difficult to pick one, but I'm going to have to go with Samwise.
Okay.
Samwise Gamgee.
Please. I actually might agree with you. Continue.
He is a humble servant who faithfully sticks to his master, who later becomes his friend. And when it's like the most horrible conditions imaginable, he does not turn back and does not go home. When he could.
Samwise, like, gives you all the crying moments.
Yes.
He gives you all the, moments. He does.
Yeah. He's brave.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
He's definitely a Gryffindor.
Oh. You had to bring in Harry Potter.
This is a crazy sci-fi podcast or whatever. I gotta bring it all in.
Mix it all in.
I gotta mix it all in.
Yeah, I like it.
I'll get Battlestar in here somehow. You don't ask me why.
Plus, I'm a gardener. I have roses, right. And I have lavender and all kinds of herbs and things like that. And so I like that about him, too. Sam was the gardener, was Frodo and Bilbo's gardener.
Do you identify with Sam the most, then?
I'm always a little reluctant to do big things. And,
yeah.
And then I'm kind of dragged into it. But that's why I'm friends with people like you. And those people help me be better than I am, I guess. And so
that's cool.
Frodo brings that out in Sam.
Yeah.
I guess. He would always have been a gardener
and
been happy with that. But going
he
out.
He can rise to the occasion.
Right.
That's cool,
going
man.
Going out and experiencing the world and what it's really like allowed him to go back and enjoy the Shire with a whole new light and with a whole, like a higher level of confidence, which he ends up with.
Mm-hmm.
What's her name? The Hobbit you're talking about.
Oh, Rosie.
Rosie. Yeah.
She's so cute.
Yes.
They're very cute. I agree with you, and I really do like Sam. I think, though, as I sit here and think about it, this is going to go much mm-hmm. more analytical than I thought. But I think that just in saying my favorite character, honestly, I think my favorite character is Gandalf. And I think because for me, I like the idea, of the hero's journey. And if you know anything about that, whatever. There's the hero's journey, and basically you start kind of reluctant, mm-hmm. start innocent, and then you wonder what you need, and then you take your call to action. It's this whole thing. Anyway, I'll explain it some other time. But the very last step of the hero's journey is like the wizard step. And there's always a lot of stories about the journey. There's Luke Skywalker, there's Frodo, there's Bilbo. There's lots of stories about how people get there, but not a lot about the wizard, which I think is the most interesting step in the process, because the wizard is like your grandparents. They've been through all of it and they still fight, you know? And I just really like, I don't know. I just really like what that says about him, about, I don't know. I like the conviction in him. And then also how he just really never gives up and he's always so calm about it.
Mm-hmm.
And just is like, this is what we got to do. Like even in the Hobbit. Oh, well, I guess you're going on this journey with us, Bilbo. Yeah. You got anything to say about that? You know, and I really love that and how heartbroken he is when what happens to Saruman and how mm-hmm. close he is to that. You know, that could, there but for the grace of God in a way, is Gandalf. And so he could have done that. He could have taken the easy way out and just given over to the power of the ring, mm-hmm. but he doesn't. And I find that interesting. And from what I've seen, the thing people least talk about. So see, that went a lot further than I was originally intending, which is why now we go to the fun part. So do you want me to go first or do you want to go first?
You go first.
Okay. Okay. My favorite fellowship member has to be Aragorn. Oh my gosh, he's so hot. I don't know why. Everything he says is hot. Whenever he's fighting, he's hot. I know that he could be my dad, but every time he's on screen, I'm just like, oh my gosh. And then I find out, like when I watch the appendices and see the interviews with him and everything, and how he came in, like somebody else was cast as, did you know about this?
No.
Somebody else was cast as Aragorn. I really don't know who it is. I'm sure there's somebody who knows, but, and I kind of don't want to know. I have not investigated this on purpose because I don't want to know. Somebody else was cast and they decided to cast a little older, which I think was brilliant. And anyway, so it's him and he was only on set. He came, he was literally like jet lagged and they threw him in front of a bunch of you know, stunt guys, and they all, like, ran at him, and he was just like, oh, gosh. You know, he tells the story. And I don't know why, just – and him as a character, too. I enjoy the idea of someone who – he's not an elf, so he doesn't have, like, crazy long life, but he's not human really either. And that's interesting to me for some reason. The fact that he's – to me, he's kind of like a slayer. He's not really supernatural, but he's not really mortal. Does that make sense? And so
yeah,
that's why
still, he is a man.
Huh? He's well, yes, man. He is a man, but he's not like the elves are kind of elevated in a way. Elevated elves. Yeah. But the elves are elevated, but the Dúnedain, which is what, isn't he, is he a Dúnedain or Numidorian? I don't know. Anyway, somebody's going to write us.
You were talking about the realm he's from?
Yes, because he's from a lost race.
Okay, okay. Gotcha.
You don't find this out until Two Towers, but I'm going to talk about it anyway.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, so he's really, really cute. And that's why I like him the best.
I like
his fighting style, too.
Yeah.
And so all of those things together, he's my favorite.
That's
there you
a
go.
Tough one.
Yeah, man.
Because I kind of like the rustic, rough man's man. I don't like girly guys.
I understand.
Pretty boys. I don't like them. But Legolas, Greenleaf. Hot.
You're not going to hear any complaints from me on that. Continue.
I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because he's an archer. Maybe it's because he's tall and graceful. I kind of like blonde. My husband's blonde.
There you go.
My husband's very tall, 6'4".
There you go.
So.
Did you notice when they're in the snow and everybody else is like trudging?
That's something that they never really touch on in the book. And just, if you're not paying attention, you'll totally miss it.
Yeah, but everyone's trudging through the snow. And go ahead.
Elves in the book are light on their feet.
Yes.
And so in this mountain pass scene, Legolas is walking on the top of the snow and everyone else is wading through it.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also one of my favorite parts is in the fight scene at the end of Fellowship, right before Frodo takes off, Frodo and Sam take off. He does this move, and this is only in the movie, but he does this move where he, like, draws back his bow, and he, like, the guy comes really close to him, so he stabs him with his bow.
Oh, yeah, and
then he pulls back and then shoots another guy with the same bow. It's awesome.
After watching this movie and playing Oblivion.
Yes.
I have wanted to learn to...
shoot a bow?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
Pick up archery. And I think I'd be pretty good at it, actually. I have shot a few arrows.
You have? Cool.
Yes. And I've hit the target very easily, bullseye, several times. So.
Oh. Well, you do have a superhuman vision.
I do.
You do.
I
so
pilot vision.
That is your superpower in real life.
Superpower.
So there you go.
So we talked about who we think is hot.
That's okay to do.
Yeah.
It's a girl podcast.
It is.
And the guys want to know. They're always curious.
What's your favorite quote in the movie? Should we move on to that?
Oh, yes. You go first, because I don't know.
Oh, gosh. I've got a couple.
Go, go, go. Do you want me to do them?
You do the one with Bilbo and, you know, I don't know half of you as well as I should.
The way
you do it so much better.
Well, let me see it so I don't forget it. Okay. So graceful are we. I don't know half of you half as well as I should like, and I like less than half of you half as well as you deserve. I love it.
Me too.
That's great.
And I like
the
too
scene.
Because everybody's like, yay!
Did you just insult us? Yes, I think he insulted us. As long as we're on that scene. The Sackville Bagginses. They have a whole larger role in the book.
Yes,
if
they do.
If you don't know about that, these guys,
they're funny.
They are hilarious. They want to inherit
Bilbo's house, and they think he's gonna die. But he, of course, has had the ring this whole time.
End, yeah.
Bag end.
They think he's gonna die. They want all this stuff, and he hasn't made a.
And they keep coming by and like marking
eyes.
Stuff, and they come and like talk about what they want and everything,
yeah.
And horrible.
That's why you made a big deal about them.
Yes, that's why he's hiding from them
right.
In the movie. Yes.
So okay, one of my favorite quotes is from Gandalf, where he goes, "My dear Frodo, hobbits really are amazing creatures. You can learn all there is to know about their ways in a month." And yet after 100 years, they can still surprise you.
I like that.
I do too.
One of my favorite, kind of not funny, but I was telling you about this earlier, is when they're in the Mines of Moria. And Boromir, this is just in the movie, so I don't know if it's in the book. And he just goes, Boromir just goes, oh, they have a cave troll. Like, but it's funny too, because it's like he assumes that everybody there knows what a cave troll is. It's like, obviously, oh my gosh, they have a cave troll. I don't know why I find that funny, but I just do. And pretty much everything that Merry and Pippin do is pretty funny. But one, and to bring it down a notch. Okay. Another Gandalf, because he is the wisest one, is, forgive me because I don't have it written down, when they're in the mines and they realize, and Frodo realizes that Gollum's been following them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And he says something about how Bilbo should have killed him, and he's like, no, you know, there are people out there who deserve to die, but there are people who die who deserve life. You know, can you give it to them? And I just love that. And I know that sounds lame, and it really doesn't have anything to do with my personal whatever, because I'm not going to get into that. But I just really like that. I like how it makes – so because Frodo was so sure of how he felt about that. And then Gandalf, pretty much what I've talked about Gandalf in general.
Yeah.
And he always says, like, he's above everything. He's just so – like, he has a –
wisdom.
He has a wisdom that looks on things in such a different view, and it's very interesting because I think it's one of those things where you think about your own self and your own, when you get kind of up in things that are so stupid, and then you think about things in a larger tapestry.
Mm-hmm.
Star Trek tapestry. But in a way, it's true. It's when you pull anyway. But when you can look at things from a larger view, it's a different.
Yeah.
It looks different, and I really like that quote. I know that's silly.
No, I like it.
I guess
another one that I like is "Fool of a Took."
That fool of a Took
uses it twice in Fellowship.
And I also like, well, this is something from another thing from the outtakes or whatever. When they steal the firework, the dragon firework, and he goes, "You put it in the ground. It is in the ground." Oh, and then he screams. Yeah. Evidently, the actor that was like, he really, because they pulled it up, you know, whatever they do, and like whatever the action was, it really startled him, and he went like a little girl. And like evidently, for weeks afterwards, it was like a thing on the set where they'd be like, and they kept it in the.
I have to watch that again. I saw that scene the other night with David. We tried to make it through. It's over three. It was like 3 hours.
It is. Do you have the extended version, right?
Yeah. I tried to stay up, and we had gotten home late, and I wanted to watch it so it would be fresh in my mind, and I just could not make it through. But we did watch that scene, and I told David, I said, "You would have done that, wouldn't you? You would have snuck into Gandalf's wagon," and he was like, "Oh yeah,
oh totally. Yeah."
He's like a pyromaniac. Most guys are, I think. Are we going to talk about the women in the movie?
Yes. Okay, well,
let me do one more thing.
Oh, please, please.
One of my favorite scenes. It's when Arwen wants to give him the Even Star.
The Even Star.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, she tells him that she chooses a mortal life. And he says, "You cannot give this to me." And she says, "It is mine to give to whomever I will."
And, awesome.
Like my heart. I just love that. It's so romantic.
I have no idea what that is.
Is that a
no? Game? No, I think it's just an electronic thing. Sorry about that, guys. I don't know. I also want, since you're talking about Arwen, before we go into what we were going to talk about, we've joked about this before, because I remember when we found out about Winona Ryder, we were like, oh, no. I have to say, and I remember this because when all of the things were going around, I was hanging out with yet another dude. And we all read, you know, on these postings about how Liv Tyler was going to be in this movie. And we were like, are you freaking kidding me? Liv Tyler. I mean, I didn't really hate her or anything, but I thought, oh my gosh. I mean, really? I mean, ugh. So I just couldn't think of anyone that I'd rather not have. You know, I didn't, again, there was no ill will towards her. Yeah. It just didn't seem like she was the right person for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, was I wrong? Was I wrong? She was fabulous. I mean, just fabulous. And just, you know, in the interviews I've seen with her, really loved the material, really loved being there. And I just can't imagine anybody else do it. And she's inherently elvish in a way.
Yes.
Like her features, And again, I mean, hey, she's Peter Jackson, gorgeous. It's all you, dude, awesome. All you. And yeah. She's not like super like creepy skinny or anything. She's just like a normal chick.
Yeah.
And which is weird too, but she still is elvish because you think of elvish women, you know, very, and all of the elves, really, Legolas is like the tall, skinniest one. All of the rest of the elves are just kind of normal. They just appear very elevated, you know. Anyway, that's just me. Elegant.
Maybe it's their wardrobe.
Okay, yes, we got a wonderful email. Dr. Mike, hello. Thank you so much.
Hello.
Are you going to read it?
I don't have it.
Oh, you want me to read it?
Yes.
Okay, hold on. Cut. Printing out emails. Here comes emails being printed out. And...
I'm gonna use that.
No,
that's gonna be a transition.
No, it had kind of a country twang to it, didn't it?
Poor meds. We ask people to send us audio so that we can respond to it on the show,
and then we don't because we're jerks. Maybe we can just Skype it real quick.
Yeah, we'll do that.
That's what we'll do. This is us killing time.
Yes.
Because last time that we had the long pause, we should have just talked about random stuff, and we didn't. I should have just made it up. Okay. Jen and Angela, I'm very excited to hear about your fellowship-themed Anomaly podcast. I would like to ask you, as girl geeks, a fairly obvious question. Why do you think J.R.R. Tolkien structured his epic with such a paucity of females? And this is really how Dr. Mike talks. My own thoughts are, beyond the obvious cultural differences in which Tolkien lived during the writing of his masterpiece, I believe that the lack of women created a minor chord-like tension that was only resolved in joyful settings of Rivendell, Lothlorien, Edoras, and Gondor after the fall of Sauron. From the Old Forest to the Mines of Moria and throughout the Fellowship of the Ring, the burdens of the Fellowship seem more difficult and farther from their blessed home because of the lack of the members of the gentler sex. I think Tolkien experienced this in World War I and subsequently used this device in his magnum opus. What say you? Thank you, Mike. First of all, thank you for writing, Dr. Mike. Appreciate it.
Yes. And such an intelligent question.
Yes, very intelligent question. Well, what say you? He even got some...
There is an obvious lack of women in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And... Well, there's only one in the movie, but I like that Peter Jackson gave her a key role, which she didn't have in the book.
Well, two, because Galadriel.
Yeah.
And then there's the women in the Hobbit village, and you get the impression in the Hobbit village, like it is in lots of places, is the women,
peasants,
you know, the Hobbit village has women in it. I mean,
I just meant key role.
Right. No, I understand. But I think what he's talking about is just the idea of like that home and pleasantness and how it is represented by the presence of women, that's kind of what you're fighting for. And I think that is something, and this kind of comes back to something we were talking about before about the applicability or how he was writing about his experiences. And I think that whenever you write anything, you are going to put your own experiences in there. Somehow,
whether you intend to or not.
Now he can say this is not an official. Yeah. And I don't think it is. You know, I think he's very true when he's very, you know, he's honest when he says it's not about World War I or World War II. But he had an experience in war, and he is talking about war and fighting and fighting for something for good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not possible for him to separate those two things.
Right.
It has to come in there somehow. It has to relate somehow, and I think it definitely does, you know, and I think that these men going out and fighting, you know, for their world, that's what they would do, and I think that what Mike brings up as far as his time also, I mean, we forget, ladies, that this whole women equal, all this stuff has not been going on for very long. It's a very recent thing, and it was just normal to not have women there, but that is almost remedied in a way in the movie by making Arwen such an important character, and then later having Eowyn, who's wonderful,
who's my favorite character in all of it.
I know she is, but we'll talk about her when we get to that episode. But anyway, so Yeah, so I think that's what he means. So yeah. What say you?
I would have to agree, because I think Aragorn obviously plays a very big
Arwen.
Role. No,
Aragorn
plays
yes,
a big role
obviously.
In this book and in the movie.
Yes.
And his relationship with Arwen is important and kind of illustrates his point, because not only is Aragorn fighting for his people, but really Arwen.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
and they also talk about her being kind of the soul
yes.
of the movie, and the fact that,
and she's dying in the movie because of all of it.
Don't talk about that yet. We don't know that Luke is the son of Darth Vader yet. You can't talk about it. I kid. But yes, no, she does. Her fate, like, it's connected to the fate of the
exactly.
ring. But it almost by her choosing, because of her connection with, it's because of her connection with Aragorn and his connection with the ring, I think. But we can talk about that another time. But I would say, Mike, that's how I think about it, is that, yes, I think that Tolkien definitely did do that purposefully. Whether purposefully or not, it did create that kind of lack of home,
right?
Being away from, because and you've seen that in stories about World War II and even Vietnam. You know, you see stories, or even any war, about you're fighting for the person who's back home, and in that time it was men were fighting, women were back home,
right.
And I think that's definitely an experience he would have had, and I think you're right. I think it does create that kind of tension. Like, this is what we're fighting for.
Well, tension's a good term, word to use to describe that, too.
Yes.
It's just, I mean, they're...
Just a bunch of dudes.
Just a bunch of guys.
Yeah. And then what is the first thing when Sam gets home? What's the first thing that he does? Is he finally has the cojones to go up and talk to Miss Rosie. And again, we're not talking about that, but we kind of have to in order to talk about the question. But yeah, does that answer?
Point. Yes. And women just soften kind of the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime there's a woman in the scene, it kind of...
Oh, that brings me to something that we talked about earlier, about the replacement of Arwen in the scene after Weathertop. Is that what it is? And it was originally Glorfindel.
The elf, yes.
The elf.
Who rescues Frodo.
Who rescues Frodo. And I admit, I didn't know the name, but I knew it was another elf.
Yeah, me too.
But we did look it up, and we found it. Mm-hmm. And he is originally, he's a Rivendell elf, and came and did basically all the same things Arwen did. I really liked that it was Arwen.
Me too.
And I did enjoy that she is the only one who can kind of get one over on Aragorn, because that's what you can do. Women tend to have a what's the word I'm looking for? An effect on men that no one else can have. They can catch them off guard a lot easier. Yeah, in one way or another.
Whenever into camp and she sneaks up on
him. When she sneaks up on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the scene where she summons the horses out of the water that flood the ringwraiths.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
That was in the book, too, but again,
it was
the elf. But I love that it was Arwen. It gave her... I think it speaks more to women of this age.
It does.
Or this era. I mean, it needed to be there.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
So that we could relate to it.
Yeah.
So, I thought that was a good choice.
Cool.
I think we're almost done.
I think we are. I think this is good. We're actually on good... We're at a good time.
Yeah.
I mean, we could open, you know...
Yeah,
gosh.
We should. We should at some point revisit the whole series and... Or maybe...
And talk about some of the through lines
to
the end.
Yeah.
I think you're probably right.
Because I have a book called Following Gandalf. That I had been reading, and I wanted to bring up some of the points in that book, but it's so deep.
Yeah.
It's another podcast.
I think we did good. I think this was a good, like, beginner
snack
of a fellowship podcast that is just fine for me.
Yes.
And the end. Just kidding. Let's go have another glass of wine, Jen.
Right, so we have, three audio comments and three emails to read.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to start with Med's comments? We could play them
sure.
now.
Sure, okay.
Yeah.
Let's play them now.
Hi, Jen and Angela. This is Meds from Waffle On Podcast, and I'm so glad that you're doing a podcast all about Lord of the Rings. It's one of my all-time favourite films and done by one of my all-time favourite directors. I came across Peter Jackson through Bad Taste a good 15 years ago and love that film. And if you ever get a chance to see it, please do, because you wouldn't believe it's done by the same person who ended up doing the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Anyway, Lord of the Rings for me is a fairly homely film, purely for the fact that a lot of the scenes in Lord of the Rings were inspired by his time of living in my home city, which was Birmingham in England. He lived there for a good while, actually. And there's a few places that he remembered, like Sarehole Mill, which is a working water mill, became the inspiration for the Shire. And Perrow's Folly and the waterworks in Edgbaston were both the inspiration for the Two Towers. They're still there. They're still available to go and see. And it really is worth going to see them, just to see what inspired such a great film. It's so well acted. It's so well shot. The scenery is just beautiful. And it really does make me want to go to New Zealand. And I just wondered if you ladies, if you ever had the chance, would jump at it to go to New Zealand and go around all the scenes, the scenery where it was all shot. Anyway, thanks for doing this podcast. And I can't wait to hear it. All the best.
Thanks a lot, Neds. Those are great insights. I had no idea that Tolkien was... I should have, but I didn't know Tolkien was from that.
Peter Jackson? I thought he said it was Peter Jackson. Okay, we're horrible people.
Was it really... Did he say it was Peter Jackson?
I don't remember.
Those were great comments, Neds.
Yes, thank you.
No idea that was the inspiration for the movie, for the Two Towers.
The story.
Yeah, that was great. And you need to send pictures so we can post them.
Also, the baby just got up, so yeah. If you hear him, hey, it just adds color.
Yeah, he's talking on his cell phone.
Yeah,
right
he's
now.
Talking on his cell phone. He's very important. Very important in imaginary land.
Okay. And then we had comments from Kenny. Take it away, Kenny.
Hello, Jen and Angela. It's Kenny from California. Long time no talk to. Been a really hectic few months here, but I definitely wanted to get my comments in on your topic for today, as The Lord of the Rings is one of my favorite novels of all time, and the movies are some of my most favorite movies of all time. So I definitely wanted to make a few comments about the first one, The Fellowship of the Ring, which, by the way, is my favorite of the three movies. And I think that is because of the adventure of it, the camaraderie. It's when the Fellowship is made. It's their travel through Middle Earth, and it's before they break up and go off into their own stories. I think that's why I do enjoy The Fellowship of the Ring more than the others. But I loved all three movies and all three novels also. When I was younger, I actually read The Hobbit, really enjoyed it, and then moved on to Lord of the Rings, and I think I got halfway through Fellowship of the Ring before it was just way too dense for me at the time. I think I was like probably 10 or 11. It's so detailed and so dense. It was so hard to keep my attention. Even though I did love, I love fantasy and, elves and knights and all that. But it was still hard for me to actually focus and read the book. So I actually put it down and didn't pick it back up until the movies came out. And once the movies had come out, I went back and actually read it. And of course, I'm much older now, and I have a better attention span, and I really enjoyed all three novels. Actually, I read The Hobbit again, too. So I started with The Hobbit, went to Fellowship of the Rings, The Two Towers, and then Return of the King. So yeah, so it's been, Lord of the Rings has always, it's been a huge part of my childhood. Along with Star Wars, it made me who I am. It made me the sci-fi fantasy lover that I am. The movies really, I think, captured the essence of the Lord of the Rings novels, which, was a daunting task. They were just so well made, beautifully shot, beautifully acted. The scripts were really good, it kept enough of the actual story. And it flowed well, and I knew it wasn't going to be for verbatim. I mean, no book to movie adaptation is verbatim. So I went into that knowing that, and just really enjoyed the movie. And I think I've always identified with The Hobbit from Middle-Earth. They are my favorite race in Middle-Earth. And maybe it's because I'm on the shorter side, but they enjoy living life and camaraderie and friendship and eating, and I'm not a smoker, but they also enjoy smoking, but they enjoy the pleasures of life, and I think I always identified with that. The elves were always stoic and tall, and there was just something about the hobbits that I identified with, and it's probably why I liked Fellowship of the Rings, because it was pretty much the hobbit's tale. It was the story of the beginning of the four coming together and then traveling to Rivendell, or to Bree first, picking up Strider, then to Rivendell. So yeah, I mean, Fellowship of the Ring just felt like it flowed really well. It was one continuous story following this group of nine people on a mission. And, I liked where Peter Jackson ended it. It's different than the novel, but I thought it did its job. It left somewhat of a cliffhanger, the breaking of the Fellowship, which is always devastating, and the death of the main character, and I think they just ended it really well. It was a nice cutoff point to stop that particular movie, and then wait for the Two Towers. Anyways, I'm rambling on. Thanks, ladies, for the wonderful podcast. I love listening to it every time it comes out, and thanks for doing a podcast on The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Rings. It is my favorite of the Lord of the Rings trilogies, my favorite novel, and my favorite movie. And I'm so happy you guys are giving your girl geek take on it. So take care, and we'll talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, Kenny, you're awesome, but that was really long.
I told him. He had some great. I love hearing why people love this movie.
And well, he was excited. Yeah. He's excited. He's just like us.
And you need to make him a costume. The man has a need for a hobbit costume.
He has
to
a
wear
need
for
a
Comic
need.
Con. You two need to get in touch, and we need to make him a Frodo Baggins costume.
Someone needs to take his measurements and then send them to me.
Yeah,
and then we'll go from there. Cool, man. Yeah, all the ones that you can buy, they're cheap.
Yeah,
don't
do
this. That's not what you want. Nah. You want a real one. You want a good one.
And really, okay. You're just looking for, 17th century?
Yes, the Hobbit costume is a little, it is that, but it's a little different. It's altered. It is altered from that. Mm-hmm. It is inspired with the waistcoats and everything, but they're also an illusion made to make people look shorter.
Interesting.
Yeah, they purposefully hiked the pants up and pulled the waist up so that even though they were, even though they were doing a lot of the illusions, it still gives the appearance of the person looking shorter when they're in kind of a different version. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to explain it.
No, that makes sense to me.
It's how it tricks your eye into believing.
That's why they tell short people not to wear pants that come up to their calves.
Yes.
Because it makes them look like they have stumpy little legs.
Exactly. And that's exactly what they did, but they did it on purpose and made them look wider too. So there you go. Anyway.
And then we had a comment from Mike.
Yes.
Hi, this is Mike from London. Quick comment on Lord of the Rings. Not so much on the first film as just generally the franchise of films, if you can call them that. My background has always been, I grew up reading an awful lot, so great familiarity with all sorts of stories. And every time, up until Lord of the Rings, you go and see such a thing in the cinema, something you've read, you always walk away feeling vaguely disappointed that they haven't quite lived up to, I don't know, their understanding of the story isn't quite the same as yours. I could cite a number of examples. I mean, maybe it's the fault of my imagination. It's perhaps a bit too good for the filmmaker's art. But then came Lord of the Rings, which, going to the cinema, see the first film. I was very familiar with the book. I read it a number of times since I was a teenager. I got through it in a week once, I think, all three volumes. That was probably my record. As I say, going to see the film with some trepidation, not quite sure what to expect. And I have to say that was the first time I came out of the cinema after watching a story with which I was familiar that I thought that was a good film. It wasn't necessarily the book in its entirety, as I remembered it anyway. They didn't necessarily get into all the scenes that they could have done. They tweaked a few bits. I mean, you obviously watch the extended version on the DVDs later on, and they've put some of the stuff they'd filmed but cut back in. But that was the first time that anybody's proven to me that a cinema release can be as good as a literary release. The imagination of the guy making the film can be as good as mine, the imagery, the way they put it together. So, as I say, not going in-depth into the story, but just to say how impressed I was by what they did with it, how they did it, the way they presented it. And that, as far as I'm concerned, set a new bar, a new level to be met by future productions, either in sort of fantasy genre or science fiction, which would be the other place I live, obviously.
Guys, thank you so much for sending us audio comments. We love hearing from our listeners. It's nice to hear your voices and hear you express your ideas with those voices. And in the future, if anybody has anything they want to send to us, we're always accepting those.
Also, so ladies, if you want to send your audio comments, that's exciting too.
Yeah. Let's move on to the emails. You're going to read the first ones, right?
Sure. Which one do you want me to read first?
You have one from Rick,
yes.
And you have one from Casey. So
let's do Rick's first.
Okay.
All right. Hi, Angela and Jen. I just wanted to say that I thought that the Lord of the Rings trilogy was really cool. Awesome. However, I'm not a fan of 50,000 hours long movies. They could have put one movie out per 10 years, and that would have worked. I remember missing different parts of each of the movies because I had to go use the restroom, and one bucket of popcorn just didn't do it for me. Anyway, I thought Peter Jackson did a spectacular job at recreating what I saw in my head. Hey, even did better than I thought. Pretty darn amazing. My only complaint was the length and the fact that you need an interpreter to understand Gollum. Thanks for the great podcast. You rock. And that was brought up by one of our audio comments as well, which I think is interesting, is the fact that this is one of the few movies that you're like, well, the book was better. You know, almost every single movie out of a book. You're like, yeah, the movie was okay, like Harry Potter or even Hitchhiker's Guide. Well, movie was good, but it wasn't as good as the book.
Yeah.
And you never really hear that. I mean, I'm sure that there's people who think that, and there are differences, but I think that's a consensus between a lot of people.
That this movie was just as good as
the
book.
It was able to kind of pluck that things right out of our imagination, which is awesome. Yeah, this is a good marriage between Peter Jackson and this material, definitely. Mm-hmm. And, of course, his whole team who worked on it.
So. Right. Thank you, Rick, for sending those in. We always love hearing from our buddy Rick.
Yay, Rick.
From Aberdeen.
And thank you for your wishes for baby Russ. You know what I'm talking about.
This one is from Drew from Florida. Hi, Jen and Angela. This is Drew from Florida. I did mean to send this last week, but procrastination is my way of life. I'm a lifelong Lord of the Rings fan, ever since I first read them when I was about 7 or 8. Every few years, I go back and reread them, including the appendices. When I first heard of the movie attempt, I was excited, but tried not to expect too much from such an ambitious project. Director Peter Jackson? Who was this guy? The man responsible for Frighteners? Uh-oh. I managed to avoid virtually any spoilers in the 2 years leading up to the premiere of Fellowship of the Ring. When it finally made it into the theaters, I was ready. Overall thoughts? Excellent. I thoroughly enjoyed it and didn't notice the 3 hours plus had elapsed. It rapidly jumped into my top 20 favorites. That being said, however, there are some inconsistencies with the book that bothered me. Not hugely, just enough to notice. No Tom Bombadil or Goldberry. This was my biggest disappointment. No, they weren't needed for the overall flow of the movie, but they do contribute to the feel of Middle-earth, its legends and history, and that not everything has to do with Sauron. Okay, this is going to tick you and me off.
Oh,
but this is just a guy's view.
Hey!
We've already given our perspective.
Right.
Expansion of the role of Arwen. I understand that they're minimal female roles in the first installment. I understand the love interest angle helps to appeal to the wider audience. I understand the why. I just don't like it. Also, this leads to larger changes in future movies. 3, the depiction of Sauron in the telling of the last battle. A friend of mine called it the Rock'em Sock'em Sauron, and I can't get that depiction out of my head. It just didn't seem to fit and feel right with me. Despite these, this movie is still one of my favorites. Good cast, excellent sets, great music, and best of all, a storyline that I love. Thanks for letting me ramble, Drew. P.S. Now I just hope that Guillermo del Toro won't mess with The Hobbit too much. Only 30 months to go. Thanks, guys. Whew. Appreciate your emails. Oh, you still have one from Casey.
Yes, we do. Okay. And yeah, whatever. Y'all hear our stuff about Arwen, so it's cool, man. Hey, ladies.
ahead. I'm sorry.
I would send you an audio comment, but my computer has been rebelling against me. That happens sometimes. Peace, talks are in order, and hopefully the situation will be remedied soon. I love Casey. Okay. I know that... Sorry. Russell, did you find the most noise-making thing? Here, look at a Victoria's Secret catalog. Okay. I know that you two are doing a Fellowship of the Ring episode, and I just thought I'd throw in my two cents. While I'm not the biggest Tolkien fan, I am still a bit jaded after reading The Hobbit. I really love the story that he put together in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. What helped a lot was Peter Jackson's mastery over the direction and script writing that he did, and the beautiful ensemble that he put together. Of course, any movie is just a little bit better with some Ian McKellen. Agreed. I believe that these movies unite geek and non-geek alike. The non-geeks don't feel it necessary to join the nerdy fold to enjoy the movies, though they're more than welcome to, and geeks can enjoy the fantasy element as well as the complex story that unfolds. So thank you, ladies, for discussing the first film, and I can't wait to hear you discuss the other films. Sincerely, Casey, a real-life hobbit. Lots of hobbits around.
I know. Where are the elves? Is it just am I all by myself?
I'm moving myself to be a Dúnedain.
Now you're a Dúnedain.
Yeah, I've decided.
Well, thanks again.
I could be a chick ranger.
You can.
Who said I couldn't be?
I'm not saying you wouldn't be a good
chick
ranger.
Hey, I have to do something.
Yeah.
But my husband's definitely a hobbit, so I don't know how that would work.
No.
If our families would not get along
or whatever. Your kids would be half-halfling.
Okay. Yeah. I guess. I don't know. Maybe I'd have to bring him along with me.
Quarter fling. That would be what they'd be.
Quarter fling?
Quarter fling.
All right.
Thanks, guys. We really appreciate all your emails.
Thank you.
And even if you disagree with us.
And audio comments.
Yes. And we know it takes a lot of time to write those. So thank you once again.
Yeah.
All right.
Sweet. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of Anomaly. If you want to contact us, you can go to our website at anomalypodcast.com. That's A-N-O-M-A-L-Y podcast.com. Or
you can email us at girlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks@gmail.com.
Or
check out our blog. We update it frequently.
Even when we don't have shows.
And we talk about stupid things, post videos there. Angela even has an interesting commentary on the Star Trek movie that
I do.
Make it into our show.
No.
So go there and subscribe to it. Have a conversation there. You know, get involved.
It's cool, man.
It's a baby
We're
a baby
still
step
continue
towards
to
a
do
form.
This, even yeah. if five people are listening to
That's
us.
That's true, we will. But it helps if somebody, like... Yes. Communicates with us because it is a podcast and not a radio show, and thus is interactive. So,
true. Drop us a line.
Yes, and please visit our website.
anomaly podcast.com.
If you go to our blog, we're going to put a poll up.
Oh, yeah.
Monthly, which, by the way, Anomaly is a monthly podcast. I don't know that a lot of people, maybe some newbies don't realize that. We put out one major podcast a month and then maybe a microcast to follow that up. And then the next month,
a mini skirt cast.
Yes, we call them mini skirt casts. So don't be expecting like one every week because we're pretty busy girls.
We are very busy girls.
So anyway, yeah, go to our blog and there will be a poll up where you can vote on the next episode. We'll have an assembly of topics with which you can choose from.
Yay!
And the one that gets the most votes will be our next main topic.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see what people say.
Me too. And follow us on Twitter. I tweet all the time. And you can get updates there on our show and just general silly things that are going on in the office because Angela and I work together and I'm always talking about the latest silly thing that she said in front of my desk.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so it's at Sevryll, S-E-V-R-Y-L-L, or at ArcAngela23. Spell it.
A-R-C-H, Angela. 23.
Yes.
A-N-G-L-A. So, that's it.
That's it for the Anomaly Podcast.
I am an Archangela.
You
what
are.
Can I say?
I love that. I love that name.
Thank you. And I always use the 23. It's an inside joke between my husband and I. Thank you very much. It's not because, all the Archangelas were gone. It's because I do it on purpose. So, y'all can figure it out if you want to. I'm Angela.
And I'm Jen.
And you've been listening to the Anomaly Podcast, where female and fandom converge. baby, yeah. Come get it. Come get it. Come get it. They're kind of like pets for a while.
Podcasting is hard work. Know what makes it worth all the effort and encourages us to keep going? Your highly anticipated emails, blog comments, and ratings, of course. Please remember to tip your anomalous co-hosts with feedback. Lots and lots of feedback. Want to stay in the anomaly loop? Follow Jen and Angela on Twitter. Jen's Twitter name is Sevryll, S-E-V-R-Y-L-L. Angela's Twitter name is ArcAngela23, ArcAngela23. Drop us a line and let us know you're following us. Otherwise, you may get blocked. And don't forget to follow the Anomaly blog. There you'll find details you may have missed in the shows, commentary, and videos. Find a link to our blog and other useful bits of information on the Anomaly Podcast website. That's ANOMALYpodcast.com. Anomaly is released under an attribution, non-commercial, no derivatives 3.0 license, which means you can copy, distribute, and transmit the work, but you can't alter, transform, or build upon it without our permission.
Hi, I'm Rick Moyer, and I want to tell you about my brand new podcast. It's called Take Him With You. Every week, I talk about what's going on in my geeky little world of television, music, and in my faith. My hope is that in a world that can sometimes be really depressing, for that at least a few moments, you can be encouraged and smile a bit. So come check it out, www.takehimwithyou.com, the weekly podcast that's spiritual, not religious. I'd love to have you listen. Thanks.
Once you've finished listening to the excellent Anomaly podcast with Jen and Angela, why don't you pop over to our podcast? We're called Waffle On, and every few weeks we'll be discussing a classic television show broadcast on British TV between 1960 and 1990. We'll be talking about British-made, US-made and Australian-made shows. So come waffle on with us at http://waffleon.podbean.com or simply head to iTunes and type in Waffle On. We'd be honoured if you'd join us.
Greetings, Guildies. I'm Kenny.
And I'm Jenny.
And we're the host of a brand new podcast, Knights of the Guild, the official fan podcast of the web series The Guild.
Each month, we'll bring you the latest news about the Guild cast, including what projects they're working on and what conventions they'll be attending.
Also, we'll be updating you on the current season, be it Season 2, which is currently airing on MSN Video, or Season 3, which is in the early pre-production stage.
We'll talk about some behind-the-scenes fun of Season 2,
as well as having cast, crew, and fan interviews.
So head over to iTunes and subscribe to Knights of the Guild.
Or go to our website for a direct download at knightsoftheguild.podbean.com. Zaboo!
The Treks in Sci-Fi Podcast.
Stand by to receive our transmission.
Sci-fi entertainment news and commentary.
I am Locutus of Borg.
Star Trek episode analysis.
Captain of the USS Enterprise.
Pokey religions and ancient weapons.
Collectibles, toy, and prop reviews.
I am to misbehave.
The weekly Treks in Sci-Fi podcast with your host Rico at treksinscifi.com.
Looking for more fan-made Star Wars audio productions? Then look no further than the home of Star Wars fan audio, StarWarsFanWorks.com. It's your source for audio dramas, audio parodies, online radio shows, and podcasts, plus the most comprehensive Star Wars fan audio news found anywhere. StarWarsFanWorks.com. Fandom has a whole new sound.
The 23rd!
Christ, what the heck was that?
In space and on the ground. Action, excitement, suspense that never lets up.
Evil and vile! Disgusting! Killed Andre! She killed Andre! She killed Andre!
The 23rd is a podcast series of crime and punishment at the end of the 21st century.
Don't. You think so, old man? You think so? Yeah, I think so.
Thrill to the exciting adventures of Gideon Carpenter as he leads his ragtag band of detectives on a crime-solving spree across the universe.
If I'm hurting feelings or stepping on toes or just generally throwing people off, that's just too bad.
The 23rd is written and performed by Edward Woodward.
I am not a lesbian.
Find the 23rd at www.the23rd.ning.com.
Your management style is exactly what's at issue. Now, since you appear to be having some problems determining exactly what your job is, I will be making that determination for you. Now, from both of you. This promo provided by the band Vincent Van Gogh and the PodSafe Music Network. Find them at music.podshow.com.
Hello there.
My name is...
Han Solo. I'm Captain of the Millennium Falcon.
No.
Lisa called Jar Jar Binks.
No.
Ben Kenobi?
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
No.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
No, Indiana Jim.
The princess?
The princess, she's here? No, princess,
no.
What's going on?
The intrepid archgeologist.
I recognized your foul stench when I was brought on board.
Well, that's not very nice. Look, would you just let me talk for once?
The ability to speak does not make you intelligent.
Hey!
I am wondering, why are you here?
I'm here to invite you to listen to my podcast, The Adventures of Indiana Jim.
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
Look, we talk about sci-fi and fantasy books and movies, creative writing, and what's hot in the world of podcasting and new media.
I knew that you were going to say that.
I also have interviews with authors and even talk a little football every now and then.
Why, you slimy, double-crossing, no-good swindler.
Who says you can't be a geek and a sports fan?
Where are you taking this thing?
Oh, right. Podcast.indianajim.net.